I heard a man behind me at the cinema say to his wife, it must have been his wife, if you start to blub during this, we're leaving. It's almost the end of Disney's masterpiece, The Jungle Book. Baloo the bear has been in a fight to the death with Shere Khan the tiger, and now the bear lies in a puddle surrounded by his friends. Mowgli's tears mingle with the rain. Bagheera the panther salutes the hero, so brave, so kind, such a lovable rogue. When the jungle animals talk of bravery, they will tell the tale of Baloo the bear. Now, even though I've seen the film about 37 times, six rows from the back, I'm crying my eyes out. As the eulogy continues, Baloo opens one eye. If only my mother could hear this, he mutters. Thank goodness for a happy ending. I suppose my children have got used to me crying at the moving moments in the cinema. They indulge me, the new man, with tenderness in his kit bag. The movie critics call them three hanky jobs, and I'm a sucker from them all. From Home Alone to Casablanca, moments on screen when things come right. Someone comes home. Someone confesses to a burden they've been carrying for years and finds release from its tyranny. Someone is forgiven. The forgotten are remembered. The hero displays huge amounts of courage or humility. The precious daughter gets married. The children are rescued. Whatever is the great moment of cinematic heart-tugging, you can be sure I will be there in the dark, six rows from the black, from the back, blubbing. Or sometimes it happens in the presence of dignity and humanity. Sitting in the Glasgow Concert Hall and feeling a surge of emotion as the whole crowd rises to celebrate the true qualities of character of Nelson Mandela there in front of us to receive the freedom of the city. There he is, the great man, waving to the people of Glasgow with a look of surprise and delight on his face, as if to say, all this fuss for me? We were on holiday in Crieff when Terry Waite was released. Watching it unfold on television, there was not a dry eye there, I can assure you, and the children looked on and couldn't understand why Dad and Mum were crying when they were so happy. The strange tapestry that is our emotions. And sometimes those feelings need space, expression. Sometimes they just well up within us and require us to affirm that we are complex and rich characters, holding within us a kaleidoscope of moods and feelings which we have to acknowledge and allow room for expression if we are to be complete people, if we are to be true to ourselves. Whatever cultural dampeners are put on us, however uncool it has become to say what we feel and to allow our emotions their liberty, the reality is we are not simply mechanistic, logical thinkers operating on intellect alone. That might work for Mr. Spock and the rest of the Vulcan clan, but not for us. Emotion is part of who we are, and we deny that or deaden it in us only at some considerable risk of real loss. And the life of faith, it's not purely and simply an academic exercise of the mind when our questions are answered and our emotions are left out of the equation altogether. It's a heart thing too, a feeling thing. Faith takes the whole of us seriously, and that means it engages our emotions as well as our thought process, holding the two in a creative balance. Christianity has within it all the ingredients that make for emotional involvement and engagement. That wonderful moment of unburdening when the guilt or hurt or shame that we carry is brought face to face with unconditional love and welcome, and we pour out our soul and find release and refreshment. The poet catches the mood when he speaks of that release and refreshment, of sins confessed, forgiveness poured out over a parched soul. When I did not confess my sins, my strength was completely drained as moisture is dried up by the summer heat. Then I confess my sins to you, and you forgave all my sins. Reminding us again of Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress with that powerful image of Christian loaded down with a great weight of the sin and guilt of the past, and then finding that removed and falling into the abyss of love as he kneels at the cross of Jesus and tears mingle with joy. Christianity is also very much about reconciliation. Broken relationships healed, through the power of love, love that God pours into our hearts, enabling us to rebuild what sin and hurt have fragmented. This is the business we're in, being reconciled and liberating healing freedom to God, and in his power, reconciled to one another. And that is an experience that involves all our emotions and invites us into that invigorating, joyful possibility. Christian faith also affirms us as valued, precious, and cushioned by a love that takes us as we are and acknowledges our uniqueness and value. In those dark moments when we wonder if anyone cares or if we matter to anyone, that's a feelings feeling that crushes us and weighs us down, an emotional dead weight on our soul. In those moments of emotional turmoil and confusion, the message of the church rings across the centuries and reverberates in our own hearts. That a mother may forget her child, but God will never reject us or forget how important we are to him. To hold that, to appreciate that, is a transforming moment of affirmation that sends a message of confidence and hope into the very fibres of our soul. There is also an emotional cost we lose out when we avoid the impact of the person of Christ, the images of his courage and dignity in face of suffering. If we allow our understanding of the faith to be nothing more than that, an understanding of the faith, rather than an experience of the immediacy and the personality of Jesus, the carpenter, the teacher, the bruised and suffering Christ, so that his anguish and his love and the realization of it are allowed to touch us in deep emotional places. If we hold back from exploring that and what it means, then a whole dimension of what the Christian life can be passes us by, and we're left with doctrines and teachings and statements of belief instead of a passion, a feeling, an awareness, a response of ourselves that is total and absorbing. We may hold back from the excesses of emotional expression that can be found in some cultures, and which all too easily degenerates into maudlin sentimentality, superstition, or schmaltz. However, if we imagine that we can go to Calvary and think about all of that, if we presume that we can listen to the story of Jesus and enter into it imaginatively and somehow come through that with our cool intact and our emotions unmoved by him, then we're kidding ourselves on. And if we imagine that we can consider the many facets of the gospel and the richness of the faith in which we stand and celebrate those without feeling anything, then there is a crucial step missed in that analysis. How is it that we can cheer on our football team and raise our hands in delight at some sporting achievement in the Olympics, or clap enthusiastically, if not always in time, at a rock concert? But when it comes to acknowledging our delight in the gospel, it's all about restraint and control and emotional ice. There is a way of talking about a certain kind of emotion that is very patronising when worship is demeaned as being happy-clappy. And yet the same people who dismiss that kind of joyful, uninhibited, spontaneous worship as somehow beneath them can also speak a little enviously of the sheer magical joy of a black gospel choir and the obvious delight they have in the worship they express through movement and rhythm and smiling. I know I've got a lot to sort out about how to worship totally and without self-imposed inhibitions, imposed by my desire to be in control or by social conditioning that restrains and puts the lid on the more expressive elements of worship. Perhaps those of us in danger of being locked into a cultural straitjacket of stereotypical Scottish Presbyterian control have to learn to live with the reality that, in fact, released from the kind of social conditioning that downgrades the feelings thing as some kind of 60s hippie self-indulgence, in reality, this is who we are, creatures of emotion. And those emotions have a right to their place within our worship. As one Christian writer warns us, emotion is not the Cinderella of our inner life to be kept in her place among the cinders in the kitchen, Our emotional life is in us in a way our intellectual life cannot be. So when worship comes from the heart, when prayer comes from the deep places within us, when the Spirit of Jesus inspires our worship, the whole of who we are shares in that praise, is caught up in that worship. It stops being about control and restraint and becomes about freedom, the liberty of the Spirit. And who dares set limits on that?